This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and we're back. Not just one of us, not just two of us, not just three of us, but four of us. Our two guests from last time are joining us again to give us the second part of the interview with them, which focuses more about not just what is the whole PCI 4.0, but how do you actually use it and why you should.
Indeed, indeed. And we're back once more with Parander and Ken to continue the conversation on PCI DSS 4. And let's dive straight in with perhaps, for those folks that are thinking about everything we discussed last time, there's a lot of changes here. I mean, Ken, you mentioned, but these are things that people should really ideally already be doing. However, now this is more of a mandate that these things should be done. But in terms of sort of, the day-to-day operations, you mentioned that there's always it always has to be looked at through a cost lens. Like, it's not just the big providers, the big software providers. Like, it's how is it going to affect everybody down the chain? What do you think are some of the biggest cost implications that come from things like this and the changes that it's going to require?
So I think encryption is one of the things that traditionally has been one of the bigger costs, right? Because sometimes you have to buy new equipment, you have to buy new software, you have to the hidden cost of that is actually process change. Because it's shocking how much stuff you find and going through some major encryption processes over the past on these fintech, you find out about all these business processes that require clear text data. And as soon as you encrypt it, you broke all those processes, you broke all this reporting, you broke your customer interaction. So now you got to go back through and rethink all these processes. So there's that. There's certificate management mandates inside here around your certificate management, and that it must be managed now, which is new, right? Before, they never really said you didn't have to manage it. It just had to. So not that you got to buy certificates. You always got to buy certificates for external. But on the internal side, you got to manage those certificates. There's API documentation. One of the hidden cost in here, because people look at documentation and go, oh, we just got to update our documentation. Well, no, it's at a level and a detail now that's almost impossible for you to do it with manual documentation, because you've got to document scripts. You've got to document, if your development team is downloading code repositories, they've got to document all this code that they're pulling in and snippets and how it's being used. You got to understand how all your APIs are being used, where they're interconnecting. You got to understand the scripting and how scripting is being connected. So there's a lot of that's going into this that people have never had to be at that level. And if you're people listening and are aware of, and I'm not sure in the EU how much it's affecting you, but it does in the US, is a software bill of materials, where in the government space, they're requiring you to document how your software is built, everything about it. Well, PCI DSS, the new one, almost is saying you need a software bill of materials without saying you need a software bill of materials. It's pretty much all the exact same information for software bill of materials, except not a mandated format. So it's not making you publicly post it on a website. So, but it is very similar, very much alignment there. So you really have to have a lot of documentation. And if you start looking at the time and the cost it's going to do to generate that, that's a hidden cost that's very, very much there. Now, some of this is unfortunately still subjective on who is your PCI DSS assessor. Because some of them are going to be more lenient on what they accept than what some of the other ones are going to be accept. So some of this is going to depend on your assessor. And that's still, I think, one of the unfortunate things about PCI DSS is it's still a little subjective, depending on the person who is doing your assessment. I still think it's still two point in time. It's got to get moved into continuous monitoring. But now we're talking about balance, because when we start doing those kind of things, we start pulling out those smaller businesses, because it's putting too much burden on them for what they need to do. So again, we're talking about balance, who can afford to do what, and how can they afford to do it. I think the other thing is risk assessment is a big change in PCI DSS and doing actual risk assessments. They're required now. There's chunks of it that are requiring you to do a formal risk assessment and write up why you think it's okay for you to have this control and maybe not this control, or back off on here and back up on here. There are certain requirements that are non-negotiable. They must always be there and must always be done. But some of it, you can risk assess it and go, well, we feel that we don't have this risk because of other things in our environment. But that's new for a lot of companies and a lot of businesses, and they may not have the internal capabilities to be able to perform a true risk assessment. They're going to have to hire somebody to come out and do a risk assessment for them. So these are the costs that people don't necessarily think about. Some of this cost can be mitigated after the time, because you get into the automation piece of it and you'll be able to reduce the amount of time and effort it takes and resources it takes to do these things once it's implemented. But that cost of implementation is going to be a high thing. So it's always about risk assessment, and everything we do in cybersecurity, even outside PCI DSS, is about risk assessment and risk mitigation. And it's about balance. So understanding what your risk appetite is as a company and how your tool set overlays with your control frameworks that you've implemented, and how, what we're good at, what we're bad at, what I need to fix, what I don't need to fix. As you're looking at all that risk and coming up with, we have to do this bare minimum and it's going to cost X amount. Those are the things that you really should have either a good partner doing this for you, or a good internal team that understands risk and has that transparent conversation with the business leadership and the powers that be that run your companies, and going, are we looking at risk in the right way? Do we fully understand who's coming after us, why they're coming after us, why it's important? Like I said, they may not be after you because you process credit cards. They may be after you because they're after one of the companies you do business with who processes credit cards. So there's this whole chain you've got to think through. And I mean, PCI DSS covers the gamut, right? Not only is it fraud and monetary loss, but it's third party risk, right? Because now you've got all these third party providers and customers normally connected directly into the back end processing system. And like I said, because you own a small business, you may not be the target, but the guy who's processing your credit card on the back end is the target. They want to get into their systems and you're a pipeline into them. So you got to think through all this risk that's out there and go, what is the right balance? That takes a lot of communication and a lot of education with everybody involved in it so that we understand what we're trying to actually protect.
Yeah. No, makes a huge amount of sense. And the thing with risk assessments is, like, when you don't know what you don't know, like, a risk assessment done in that sort of state can be not terribly useful. So yeah, having experts along for the journey there makes a huge amount of sense. I think that's kind of a really nice sort of segue onto, you know, how do organizations achieve compliance? Like, what does that journey look like? And probably, Paranda, it's probably a question best directed towards you, as that's really what your folks do.
I mean, conceptually, how should they achieve compliance versus practically how they achieve compliance are two different things, and that's what you see.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for organizations, the multitude of regulations and things that have popped up makes it really challenging for them, because every other week they're looking at something different, slightly different, right? There hasn't been normalization across the many different sets of things. And what that leads to is prioritization and say, what's my biggest exposure? Let me focus on that. If I can't get my cybersecurity policy underwritten, what do I have to do to get there? Second, if my operations are going to be shut off because I'm not compliant with PCI DSS, what do I do? Then GDPR pops up. Oh, we've got operations in there. My exposure there is some percentage of revenue, theoretically. How do I cover that? That becomes a constant jumping around of things as to what they're going to cover on any given day, right? Our approach is, our approach as a product or a platform is different, saying there is commonality across all of these things, right? Whether it's related to data security, data privacy, governance, risk management, data discovery and classification. Approach it that way so that one, you do it once and it covers everything that you need to do, as opposed to jumping from one thing to another. And the common set of things is like, which companies struggle to do is identify where your sensitive data is. That's the classification and discovery. Identify that, right? Secure it, whether it's through granular encryption, overlaying policy and privilege enforcement, and on top of that, doing threat prevention and detection across all of your data sources, protect the data sources, everything else falls into place. That's what we keep preaching, and that's what we keep telling our customers. That's the best way to do it. Whether you do it through the lens of PCI DSS today, HIPAA tomorrow, or GDPR, they're the same thing. They're all asking you to do this exact same thing. On paper, it may look different and may be at different levels, but what they're all asking you to do is protect your customer data, right? Prevent damage to their reputation, prevent damage to yourself financially and legally, and be compliant. And that's the way they should be looking at it. Unfortunately, because they've all happened in pieces, it makes it challenging for organizations to be compliant or to achieve compliance across the board.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think ultimately to add on to that is it a lot of times this becomes an architectural discussion, an overarching architecture discussion, because as Parinder said, if I had the one thing about PCI DSS too is it's about scope. ISO is about scope. Any of the frameworks, they're about scope. What is in scope? What's not in scope? Well, if I can limit my scope, I can reduce the cost to implement. So if I know all my PCI DSS data lives inside this boundary that I've created in my environment, so I put it on specific storage devices, I've put it in a specific network segment, I've limited access to all data can never move in, or the sensitive data can never move out of that environment except in the appropriate encrypted manner, and everything in there is encrypted. If I can get it all into one area, put all those controls and that fences and walls and moats and whatever else, all my defense layers around that data, and limit who has access to it and how they can interact with that data, I can reduce the cost and the complexity of implementing PCI. The problem is most large companies have been doing this for a long time, or even small companies have been doing this for a long time. That data has moved all over their environment. They don't know where it's at. They don't know who has access to it. They don't know whether it's encrypted or not. So you have a couple of choices here. You still got to go do the discovery piece. You still got to tag the data. You still got to classify the data. You got to find it. Now you got to move it to a smaller area, a more controlled area. Then you got to put the appropriate encryption on it. Then the things about anomaly detection and vulnerability detection become easier, because now I've got a smaller environment to deal with. Now I'm limiting access to it. Now, the problem is you run into a people problem at this point. I'm changing the way that you do your job. I'm changing the way you interact with whatever you've been interacting with for however long. And the second I do that, it becomes a different battle. It becomes a politicized it becomes this friction because you're changing the way somebody does their job. And as soon as you do that, you're going to get pushback. You're going to get friction. You're going to get people who are upset. So it's an education problem going, look, if we do these things, if we identify all this data, we move it in, we lock it down in the way it should be locked down to start with, we can minimize our cost and truthfully the burden to keep this operating and keep this going forward. That's where ultimately, and it doesn't matter whether we're talking PCI data, health data, privacy data, it's all the same. You need to get it into a manageable scope area that you can put the appropriate control set around and limit the access to it. If you do it in those ways and have those conversations, your life becomes much easier. It's not easy. It's not complex. But you can make your life less complex over time. And now saying you can get there in a couple of days, no. This is probably a multi-year process to re-architect and move everything in, because you're never going to be able to find this stuff all instantly and do that. Although there are products coming out now that are helping us do this, it's still not the easiest thing to do. And then you got application development. Your application may have been written to do it this way. Now I have to rewrite an application. So now I got lead time, and do I focus on moving and reducing risk and getting this into a better operational standpoint? Or do I release a feature that my customers are asking for, or that somebody on the business side thinks is a must that we got to get out in front of for our competitors? So now you're balancing that risk. Am I putting revenue at risk because I'm limiting the amount of time it takes us to get a feature out, or am I reducing risk, which is more important? So this becomes a prioritization conversation with the business leadership, that you've got to be transparent and can't die. You got to figure out what hill you're going to die on sometimes. And again, I think there's this basic things that you have to set to say, these are the things that we're just never going to negotiate on, and these are the things we're going to allow some risk around. And encrypting your data helps you get out of a lot of this. As long as it's encrypted, no matter where it sets and it's always encrypted, this helps you reduce some of the risk until you can get it your arms around everything that's in your environment.
But Ken, I don't understand. I mean, I have a lot of people asking me, customers, sell me a piece of software to make me PCI compliant. It's not that easy.
No, it's just like zero trust, right? The zero trust is one of those terms. There's not a zero trust product. And the funny thing is what we're talking about with PCI DSS, if you go back and look at the tenets of zero trust, guess what it is? PCI DSS controls. Guess what it is? It's ISO controls. It's CIS controls. It's privacy controls. They're all the same stuff. But there's no single product that does this. It's a set of practices and a set of tools and a set of processes that allow you to mitigate risk. And think of it in that way. I'm sure there's some sales guy out there, company out there, who's telling you they're selling you a PCI DSS product. And in reality, what they're selling you is snake oil at best, or they're selling you a lot of products that they're going to struggle to implement over time. And I'm going to go back to this. It don't matter what product you buy. If you can't execute on implementation and setting it up correctly to do what it is, it doesn't matter. You've built yourself a false sense of security now and actually increased your risk because you bought a tool and think that's made you good. And I've seen that way too much in my years in the industry, is people run out and buy whatever the top right quadrant tool is, the best in breed, and don't implement it fully or correctly, and they're like, oh, we're good, we got this product. And then you find out, well, it was never put in the ON position, so it hasn't done anything for us to be able to take care of our company.
Yeah, no, makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. So maybe if folks were to dust off their crystal ball and think a little bit about the future. Obviously, PCI DSS, as we've now found over these last couple of episodes, has been around for version 4.0 has been around for a couple of years now. But what does the future look like for this and data security standards as a whole? I can't imagine this is the last update we'll see in this area. And where do people think it will go next? Maybe Paranda.
Oh, I can look at my crystal ball and say in the future there'll be one standard for securing all sensitive in private data. But I also look at a pragmatic perspective and say that's never going to happen. It is going to be a fragmented set of rules. The opportunity here is for organizations or companies to say, we have to comply with so many regulations. Let's look at normalizing what these requirements are and then implementing them so we are compliant with anything that comes out. I think that's going to happen a lot faster, because when you look at it from a organization's or an entity's perspective, that's a lot more efficient cost-wise, process-wise, people-wise. And when whatever analysis they do periodically, they look at go, we are spending so much money and resources on being compliant with seven different regulatory requirements, and they all look similar. Why don't we kind of normalize them and kind of adopt or embrace one set of standards for ourselves that meets everything? I think that's what's gonna, that's what it will evolve into. And they'll do it for valid and selfish reasons, which is to minimize their spend, plus more equally importantly, to protect themselves and to minimize the financial and economical damage that any kind of a data loss or an attack would entail.
Yeah, makes sense. Ken, any thoughts from you?
You know, I'm gonna piggyback off of what Parender's talking about. It's called a unified control framework, right? Mm. And there's some out there you can find already that people put together. But in the truth of the matter is, you need people or partners working with you to look at your environment, look at your systems, your situation, and put together the appropriate control set, map all that out. And I've done this for companies I've worked for in the past. It's simply because I wanted to make my job easier and save money. But what it really looked at is good. They told us to do this. This one told us to do this. We're doing this. It actually meets this across the board. Put together a document that explains what your capabilities are. So when you sit down with a customer, a regulator, an assessor, an auditor, whoever, and go, this is how I meet this control. Now, it becomes a sales tool, and this is something I think everybody should be thinking about. If you're doing business, whoever your customer is, whether it's B2B, B2C, whatever, especially B2B world, you're now, especially in the global market, you're being asked to provide your capabilities in the sales contract and have this discussion with the companies you're doing business with, because they're trying to mitigate their third party risk and fourth and fifth party risk. So you being able to sit down and go, I know I'm good on this area because this is the way I've implemented this control across the board. And this is how we encrypt data. This is how I limit access. This is how I protect my web front end. If you can lay all that out, it's a sales enablement tool as well. Because now I can go to any customer who comes to me with a contract and says, well, you got to be able to do this and this and this to do business with us, and go, well, yeah, I'm comfortable saying, yes, we do that 100%. So I think the thing is sit down, understand your business. And I'll throw in something I've been throwing in a lot here lately with people I talk to is think about business continuity, right? As we look at the breach reports for 2024, the cost has went up dramatically on what it costs when you get breached. Well, a big part of that cost is revenue loss. That's one of the big increases because they've now added that into the breach reports and how much companies are losing in revenue when they get breached. Not just the recovery from it, not just the fines and all that, but how much revenue they're losing. And that drastically ramped this up. So I think if you think about business continuity and go, I need to know how all my systems interact together and where all the data moves to and how people are accessing it, so I know how to recover. And if I have a building go down, a data center go down, a server go down, I need to know all that. I need to know the same thing for cybersecurity. I need to know the same thing for risk mitigation. Cybersecurity is part of my overarching business continuity plan, just like disaster recovery is not business continuity. Disaster recovery is a component of business continuity. I need to understand how I'm going to recover my backups. It's the same thing with ransomware, right? If I get ransomed, and it's in the news a lot lately, if I'm in get ransomed, what does that impact my business? How do I get back up? How do I keep continuing to provide the service or the do the business that I do? So if you think through it in those ways, you can then start putting the appropriate control set customized to your environment in a way that allows you to do it. Spend $2 to protect $10, but not spend $5 to protect a dollar is the best way I'll explain it. Appropriately size your program. That is the big part of this. So my crystal ball is you're still going to get attacked because it's easy. It's super easy, and it makes these guys, these industries, because it is an industry, they have office buildings, they have three shifts, they've got help desks, they're just like everybody else. It's a $1 trillion industry for them to attack us. The thing is it's much easier for them to attack than it is for us to defend, because they just got to get lucky once. We got to be perfect every time, and that's the unfortunate nature of our business. So if you can start thinking about how I limit my attack surface and how I protect my data, my sensitive data in a way and limit access to it and make it easier for our teams to be perfect every time, then you're getting ahead. And being able to explain those capabilities to my outside entities, whoever it is that has interest in my capabilities, and being able to explain why we think we're doing everything we're supposed to be doing, it will make your life easier.
Yeah, actually a great point there about the proportionality of the cost of what you're trying to do versus what you're protecting. Because specifically for the disaster recovery, I talked a lot to customers that we need disaster recovery. Oh, it's that expensive. Okay, we still need it, but we're going to trim it down, make it as cheap as possible. And instead of protecting stuff, they're actually breaking other stuff. And that's a message I can't hear loud enough.
You know, it's a great point, Jan. It's do I need instantaneous failover? Do I need 2 to 3 days? Do I need 30 days? Yeah. Do I just need the ability to go back and pull it off of a backup device and get back up within a week? Those are all valid disaster recovery. They all cost very different, and they also have complexities of implementation.
Yes.
A hot failover site is one of the most complex things you will ever implement, because you need all your data and all your systems to instantaneously come up in another location without it impacting a customer that's connected to it. That's complex. Backing it up tape and having that air gapped and offsite, it's a great way to guarantee I can come back up, but it's slow. It's going to take days to recover, and I need to test all this stuff and make sure my teams understand how to do it and how long it's actually going to take. Because that's another thing that gets overlooked a lot in this discussion, is the ability to actually perform that. It's muscle memory. It's like tabletop exercises for breaches. It's like anything. You need to practice and understand, you know, the requirements. Too often I've walked into a company and went, oh, we got a great DR plan. And then you look at what they've been doing and you go, you realize none of the servers you have enough storage to even reconstitute the tape backups on, because you've grown so much over time. There's not enough space to actually recover this stuff. So it's things you have to constantly, it's never a set and forget. And that's the one thing I think everybody needs to be aware of. It's never set and forget. It is constantly be evaluating. And that's why I said we need to move out away from point in time assessments and move to continuous assessment, continuous monitoring, continuous governance, because that keeps us up to speed on when things are changing. And we know when we need to adjust our plans, whether it's BCP, whether it's DR, whether it's cybersecurity, whether it's how our customers are connecting to us, because it's constantly changing.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, everybody tests their backups. Nobody tests their restores. And it's also this flexibility, right? The whole smorgasbord on choices you have, that you need to have partners that have done this before, that know what's available, because it's the unknown unknowns again. If you don't know what's available, what you can do, how you can save money wisely, do it on your own is hard.
And I think as I'm looking at my next adventure in life as in between roles here, is that's one thing that's important to me when I'm talking to companies, is how do you discuss this internally? Mm-hmm. Is this something that you and the business, that the security team, the infrastructure team, the application teams, the business teams are sitting down and having this conversation? If your culture doesn't allow for you guys to sit down and have all the stakeholders in the room and have this conversation, it's not going to be a fun place to work.
Right? Yeah.
Because something's going to happen. And you know, you need to be able to have these conversations and get people discussing this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're pretty much at the end of our time on this topic. That maybe the one thing that I would finish on, and maybe I'll go back to Paranda first, is like, what's the one takeaway that you would want people to kind of think about when it comes to sort of PCI DSS 4.0?
I mean, reacting to the changes and trying to implement just the deltas, I think is the wrong way to look at things. I think holistically viewing the PCI DSS requirements in the context of data protection and data security is the right way to do things. And it's not from, it's not selfishly from a point like we can sell more software perspective. It's like what Git puts you on a path to being compliant, staying compliant, and not having to react to the next set of changes, whether it's PCI or something else. I think that holistic perspective of taking a step back and saying, what's the best thing we can do to protect ourselves and still be compliant with PCI DSS 4.0 is the right perspective, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, nice. And Ken, what about you?
You know, I think Perinder hit the nail on the head there. It's if you're doing what you should be doing and are paying attention to not just PCI, but the industry in general, and you understand your capabilities and your risk level, nothing like this should ever surprise you and should never be a cost so much that I can't do this. It should be minor shifts in what you're doing and making sure that you're able to report on your capability in the way that's required for this. Because again, nothing in this is greatly shockingly new. It's stuff you should have been probably doing anyway. There may be some slight different ways you report on it, and there's little different reporting and documentation requirements that's never been required before. But in general, this is not new information. Like I said, it's everything old is new again. Data protection, data governance is something we've been talking about for the last 30 years. Yeah. It's still something we suck at. It's still something if you see any cybersecurity conference or talk or webinar that here of late, data protection is now all of a sudden the new hot topic. Well, it's never went away. It's just like identity and access control. They're not hot, not new topics. They're not hot things. It's just stuff that we haven't figured out how to do it right. And part of the reason is because it's change and it's friction, and companies are unwilling to go back and do the work because they haven't done the evaluation to see what the true cost of it should be. They just look at this big number that throws out there and go, we can't afford to do that. So what they got to do is start looking at that architectural discussion and go, how do we re-architect things and do it in a way that makes this not only affordable, but also makes it sustainable and reduces our overall risk?
I think that's very well put, Ken. I mean, if companies are looking at PCI DSS as a reason for data protection or security, they're already on the wrong track.
100%.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, with that, I think we have come to a conclusion. So I want to say once again, thank you, Perinder, for joining us to chat once more. And Ken, thanks for giving us time as well to chat through all the complexities and challenges with PCI DSS 4.0 and beyond.
Thank you all.
Thanks
for having us on.
Pleasure.
Thanks
so much.
And there we go. That wraps up our PCI DSS 4.0 overview and how-to sort of session. Hopefully you all enjoyed that. A huge thanks to both Perinder and Ken for joining us and telling us how it is or how it should be. And hopefully giving folks out there a little bit of knowledge that maybe they didn't know. So, huge thanks to Perinder and Ken.
Yeah, big thanks, because it can be very dry material talking about PCI certification and things like that. But they were able to make this kind of fun podcast, learn some stuff. It's good.
Yeah, definitely. Well, unless there's anything else from you, Jon?
Nope.
In that case, that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a Patreon, and every contribution really does help. We are on YouTube. You can like and subscribe and comment and hit the notification bell, the YouTube things. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and more information about the podcast. And please send any feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org. But until next time, my name is Fully Compliant Dave.
And my name is, we didn't like day 4.0 at all, so we sent them back and got the certified version now back. Jon?
And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.